podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome back to BTR Boxing Podcast Network. This is the Big Fight Reaction Show. I'm your host, Sean, and I'm joined by Johnston to talk about what an exciting weekend we have just witnessed in the sport. Gervonta Tank Davis stopping Ryan Garcia via TKO in the seventh round. A huge, huge fight and a really, really good ending to the fight. A fantastic body shot, which we'll talk about, but also a potential candidate for fight of the year in Rakhimov versus Cordina. Cordina becoming a two-time IBF champion, beating Rakhimov in what was a real back and forth affair. Very excited to dissect both of these fights and talk about them. And then of course you've got notable moments from the weekend, like Alan the Savage Babich getting sparked in Poland in the first round. Martin Bicoli carries on by beating his opponent, and then you've got the likes of Gavin Gwynn on the Cordina undercard. There's a few other things to dissect across the course of this episode. But Johnston, bringing you straight into it now, Tank Davis, what an intelligent fighter he is, and what an exciting fight Davis versus Garcia was.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? I was as impressed with Davis as I've always been, and he does really remind me of Canelo, just the way he's so patient no matter how the fight's presenting itself. And he's almost like got this radar clocking his data, isn't he, waiting for opportunities to arise, and that opportunity obviously arises in a second. I mean, it was a beautiful shot that put Garcia down, wasn't it? And Garcia was obviously trying to put the pedal down, really, put the pressure on him, and try and make him be a bit more rash and waste his shots. And he certainly didn't do that. Even then, he just sort of, that lovely shot that he landed on it was all like a right hand upper. Was it an uppercut? It wasn't really an uppercut. It was just because he was so little. For me, the size difference was crazy to look at, really. I knew Garcia would be taller, but I was quite surprised. It was an emphatic finish from Davis. And a lot of people have said that Garcia give up. I can sort of understand that. It took the wind out of him. He's gone down, waited for that 10 seconds and then got up. Did he quit? I mean, he could have carried on, but I think he would have eventually got stopped. So maybe he just saved himself for another day. The body shots, though, you know, if anyone's had one, it bloody hurts, though, doesn't it, Sean?
It does.
And you know, it does. They are harder to come back from. And at times, it looks like someone's give up. But in actual fact, it really hurt. And I sort of thought it was a bit of a way out for him, because he could then say, I got done with a body shot because of the weight issue, possibly. Maybe it is a bit of a get-out clause. I can understand that. But the body shots are, once they connect and they land accurately, they're devastating. And as you see, Garcia was unable to get up.
It was like a delayed reaction in my eyes. It was like,
it was.
I always remember Ricky Hatton and Jose Luis Castillo on the body shot that Hatton lands, the left hook to the liver. Same type of shot that Tank landed on Garcia. And it was, what, a second, maybe two before Castillo reacts and turns around and goes to the knee. Similar thing, really, with Garcia. And I think it was a shot that completely took it out of him, completely. And he just couldn't get up from it. He's probably questioning himself while he's on his knee at the point, thinking, is this worth it? And, you know, there's probably all sorts of thoughts going on through his mind. Can I really get up? Or he's probably thinking, I'm trying to catch my bloody breath and I can't. So, you know, at that moment when that happens to you, if you've ever taken that level of a body shot before, you can't really say until you've taken one what you would actually do. Because if you've taken something like that in the moment, it's a fight or flight moment. You're either going to get up and you're going to try your best to carry on, or you're not going to be able to get up. And the fight's going to end before you know it. And that's what happened. For me, that's what I saw. I saw a guy that it crippled him, and he couldn't get up. People saying he quit, people saying he was rate drained, so he decided that was it. I'm not buying into any of that stuff personally. I mean, anybody that's took a body shot, I've took a body shot, and it bloody hurts. It really does bloody hurt, and it really does take the wind out of you. And to try and recover from something like that, it's in a fight.
In
10
seconds as well.
Well, it's...
You've got to remember, it's 10 seconds. You've got to exactly. try and get your breath back. It's not an easy thing to
well,
do.
Well, I was going to say, try dealing with a body shot like that and keeping yourself in the fight throughout the course of the fight. It stays with you throughout the fight. That's the point I'm trying to make. If you take something like that earlier on in a fight, it stays with you throughout the course of the fight. Taking something like that halfway through a fight, going into the second half of this fight after he'd already taken some significant blows, it just, for me, it just finished him off, and it was a really well-placed body shot, and I don't think there was nothing he could do about it. It's as simple as that for me. I'm not buying into this theory that because he looked weight-drained, that he was weight-drained, that he didn't get up because of that. Yes, it could have had something to do with his resistance as a result, but in terms of his heart and determination, I don't think it had anything to do with that, personally. People might completely disagree with me, but you know what? I don't care. I've personally been in a ring, and I've personally felt it, and I've personally had to go through that level of adversity, as I said before, so I know exactly what it feels like. And you're either gonna try and get up and try and go through the rest of the fight suffering, or you're gonna accept that this is not something I can get up from, regardless of what heart and determination I have. I'd say props to Garcia, because I think he showed heart and determination throughout the fight, but Gervonta Davis is just an intelligent fighter, and I think he systematically broke Garcia down throughout the course of that fight. And there's sort of levels to IQ within the ring, and they talk about this whole intelligence within the ring, and having someone like a Davis who has shown again how intelligent he is inside the ring is just proving to everybody else that, you know, this is a guy, regardless of what his style is, he's still a very intelligent fighter. And you put him in there now with anybody in the division, and he will give them an almighty difficult night. People are talking about him fighting the winner of Haney versus Lomachenko in May. I'd love to see him against any of the two of them, because I think it provides a completely different fight, whomever he faces. But for him to not have a title in this division at the moment seems pretty ludicrous, given that he's probably one of the top stars in the division. Aside from Haney, who's undisputed, you know, Gervonta Davis is probably the other star of the division at the moment for me.
Well, the argument that some people are saying is that he's the face of face of boxing, in fact. And, you know, it's difficult to argue with that. But I suppose when you look at sort of what is that victory for Hank... For Tank, sorry, Hank, listen to me. Is that victory for Tank over Garcia as good as what Lopez did over Lomachenko? I don't think it is. I think that's, for me personally, I think Lopez's victory over Lomachenko was better, but he wasn't able to follow that up. So what Davis now needs to do is follow that up, and he needs to follow up with an impressive victory. You know, for me, I think the only one out there that I believe could probably cause problems for Davis and potentially beat him is Stevenson. I honestly feel that that would be an absolute super fight, Stevenson against Davis, because I sing praises for Stevenson in terms of his range and how he sees pictures and paints pictures in the ring, how he does keep that range so well and works behind that jab, and he's got fantastic footwork. And the one thing I would say about him is that he doesn't really put his foot down enough to knock people out, when I believe he has the ability to do that. Whereas Davis is the different side of that, where he waits, he's patient, and he's timing if he shots, his power, you know, his IQ, just like Stevenson as well, but just slightly different in the way they go about their business. But that makes a very intriguing fight for me. And I think he's the only one, really, in all honesty, that causes Davis problems. I think if he connects with Haney goes. No disrespect to him, he's the undisputed, but I still believe that that's probably why Haney's bided his time a little bit. You know, he's got himself into a great position with the Cambosas Junior victories, and now got Lomachenko. He's got a point to prove. But you want to see these guys face each other, don't we, Sean? Hopefully this is the benchmark for that.
I agree. I think this is the benchmark for it. If nothing happens from here now, it'll be an utter anticlimax with this fight. You know, this is hopefully the beginning of what could potentially be a modern-day Fab Four. And this is what we were talking about in our preview. You know, this could be the start of a modern-day sort of Fab Four, potentially five, really, with some of the fighters around. I think Garcia's pretty much said that you know, he struggled with the weight. He said it in one of the interviews I watched afterwards that, you know, I'm thinking about the move up in weight and, you know, maybe the weight wasn't right. He didn't provide too many excuses. He accepted his defeat like a man, and they were both very sportsmanlike afterwards, given all the crap beforehand to sell the fight. And it was nice to see all that sort of stuff. Now we want to see Davis move on. Now we want to see him get the big fights. We want to see him lie in wait for the winner of Haney Lomachenko or fight Stevenson. That's what we want to see. But what we get is probably going to be a completely different story. For Garcia, he obviously needs to find his weight now. He needs to find the weight, and he needs to go with that weight, and he needs to start building upon that and start building upon on his future, because he's got a bright future ahead of him. This is the thing people forget. You know, he might be 23-1 now, but he's still 24 years of age. The same as someone like a Stevenson. They're both very young in their ages, that they could be around for another 7-8 years and still be within the prime of their boxing careers. I don't think Garcia at all is in the prime of his boxing career. I really don't. I think for me, Garcia will be in the prime of his boxing career in about another 3-4 years, when he's had more difficult fights like this. This will be a huge learning curve for him, and hopefully it will make him a better fighter, and we'll see some more exciting fights involving him, because he's got the ability to make it difficult for anybody. It was a really good fight. I really enjoyed the fight. I really enjoyed watching in the chess match of what was the fight. And I, after seeing Rakhimov and Cardona, you know, I was just like, what else could top this? And I thought, you know, Davis and Garcia have got something to live up to here, because this fight between Rakhimov and Cardona was fantastic. So it did. Davis Garcia did, for me, it lived up. It was a great advert for the sport of boxing. That's what I will say. After all the stuff we've seen in the past few weeks, all the controversies, all the issues with drugs testing, another fighter has tested positive for clofamine as well recently. And it's just marring the sport and muddying the water so much that you need a legit fight like this to sort of bring you back into the fold a little bit. And this is what we were excited about. And I think this fight in particular certainly delivered. But what about Cardona and Rakhimov then, Johnston? That turned out to be better than I expected.
Ah, what a fight. What a fight. And it looked like it was going to be an early night, to be honest. If you were with Cardona at the beginning, I couldn't believe it when he put him down. And I was like, wow, he's in a bit of bother here. But, you know, Rakhimov come back. He had Cardona, he had him hurt a few times or a couple of times. One time in particular, where he looked really hurt and he was having to hold on. But Cardona, as we said, Sean, we said that Cardona's going to have his problems. It's not going to be an easy night for him. You know, he could box his way to an easy victory, but, you know, eventually he's going to have to dig in. And that's exactly what happened. And Rakhimov put him under some pressure. And what I loved about Cardona was the fact that he went through a little bit of adversity in that fight. He recovered himself, went back to his boxing, and his counter-punching on Rakhimov was just beautiful to watch. When Rakhimov would have a go at him, he'd come back of a counter and hurt him back. That for me showed a class that I haven't seen from Cardona before. The fact that he can grit in. You love to see that with a fighter when he's hurt, being able to still have your wits about you, because that's what this is all about, Sean. How many times have we said it in our career profiles? How many times have some of the top managers, top coaches, you know, your Angelo Dundee's, your Castellamartos, whoever you want to pull out there, they all say that this sport is predominantly mental. And to be in trouble, to then be able to adapt and then recover and then take control of a fight, speaks volumes about that individual. It's a very hard thing to do when you're tired and you're hurt, to be able to get a clear mind. And I feel that that's what Cardona done. That's what impressed me.
It was a fantastic fight. Contender for fight of the year. We're in April. There's many more fights to go, but he certainly sits up there as one of the fights of the year. It was all action. It was really just action from bell to bell. It was fantastic to watch. Really enjoyed it. Just when you thought Cardona was going to get a victory early on in the fight, Rakhimov just came back and he was like a machine. He was like a Terminator in the ring. He literally just wouldn't stop coming. He threw everything he had into that fight. And that just goes to show you how much this fight meant to him, clearly, because he wouldn't stop until that final bell. And Joe Cardona, he was very classy. Throughout courses of the rounds, he was very classy. His punch picking was brilliant. His ability to maneuver around the ring at certain points of the fight was brilliant. His footwork played dividends at certain points of the fight, and I just felt like he did a bit of everything in this fight. Cardini, he was able to mix it up and stand and trade with Rakhimov, but he was also able to use that movement, pivot him around, swivel around Rakhimov, use the punches to effect and keep him at bay, and ultimately he gets a split decision on the card. It goes the distance, as I thought it might, and he gets a split decision, and one judge scored it to Rakhimov and scored it 5 rounds to Rakhimov, which I knew it was a really, really close fight. By the end of it, when the bell went and the judges took ages to put the cards out, my honest initial reaction at the time before the scorecards were announced was that it was going to be a draw. That was what I felt. I thought, this is going to be really, really close. It's going to be a draw. Rakhimov's had some really, really good rounds, possibly nicked a couple of them rounds as well. And when the scorecards were announced and it was split and it was 116, 111 to Rakhimov, 115, 112 to Cardino, and as soon as I heard the word 114, I thought, it's going to draw. 114, it's going to be 114, 114, a draw. And then he said 113. I was like, I actually didn't know who they were going to give it to, because I thought it was one of them fights that on any given night you could have easily looked back at that and scored that to Rakhimov, because that's how close some of the rounds were in this fight. And that was what was great about it. You know, there was, even though Cardino did some great work, Rakhimov did some great work in there. His ability to get on the inside, his ability to throw the shots, and whether they all landed or not, he was still very active all the way through the fight. And I think it just gave us the contrasting tale of two different fighters and two different styles going against one another, and it was ultimately Joe Cardina's style that prevailed. But like you said, Johnston, it was nice to see him dig in and grit when he needed to, because he was hurt in the fight. He was hurt, and I thought, this is where Rakhimov's going to do what he did to Zelfa Barrett. He's going to get to him later, he's going to hurt him, and he's a great finisher, Rakhimov. But Cardina had the wits about him, he had the determination, the heart, he had everything he needed to have to be able to get through that and then come back and stamp his authority on the fight. And that's just the sign of a great fighter. And you know, Joe Cardina in the super featherweight division now just wants to clean up the division, and my word, are there some good fights out there for him. You've got the likes of Oscar Valdez, Emmanuel Navarrete, Oshik Foster. You know, he's become the new king of this division with his upset of Ray Vargas. So, you know, there's some absolutely fantastic fights out there for Joe Cardina. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing him in the ring again, because that was just a perfect display of grit, determination, boxing ability. And he came up and he prevailed. Great fight. Definitely for one of the fights of the year, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think the one thing I would like to say, because I do criticise judges, I criticise referees on a regular basis. You know, the third man in the ring show, Mr. Steve Gray, I thought he was brilliant. I can't help, even when there was a couple of times when they went over their heads and he sort of just separated them, just, and he kept having a word of them, you know, about their heads, both of them. But he allowed that fight to be good. If you could, we've seen it before, with some referees where they're just constantly involved and wanting to be on the screens. He, for a big guy as well, Mr. Steve Gray, you barely knew he was there at times, and he allowed those guys to fight. So, yeah, a big, I'm going to praise him. Mr. Steve Gray, great job.
It's not often we're praising him, is it? We're always slacking him off.
Never.
Or something or
always,
another.
Always, always. It's nice to have actually watched the fight and actually forget at times that there was even a referee in there. Yeah. Beautiful, loved that. Everything about that fight was brilliant. And there's me saying I thought that was going to be the most boring of the nights, because I felt it'd be more of a tactical fight and one for the boxing purists. Well, I was wrong, because there were times in that fight that just lit up, didn't it? The crowd as well, Sean. The rendition, that Welsh song. I'm not going to even go there and try and pronounce the name of it, but I've heard it enough in European Championships and that. But, core, that was powerful, that as well. And that was lovely to see that. I mean, I just love all that. The crowd, the atmosphere, it was electric. And it was, and that just went on to produce 12 great rounds of boxing. Loved it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Really, really thoroughly enjoyed that. And on that particular card, I actually enjoyed a few fights on there, to be fair. I enjoyed Gavin Gwynn and his destruction of Craig Woodruff. You know, they had a draw in their last fight, which is why this was run back. But this time, Gavin Gwynn left no stone unturned in his preparation, because he absolutely demolished Craig Woodruff in this, right? Because I just just watched Gavin just literally just dismantle him. And when the fight was eventually stopped in the fifth round, it was coming a mile off. It was like three rounds into the fight and he's already had his number. And you could tell that Woodruff didn't like what was going on. He couldn't cope with the tenacity. He couldn't cope being trapped on the ropes. He weren't throwing much back. And I was saying three rounds into the fight to my wife at the time, I was like, he's just not doing nothing. He's not throwing nothing back whatsoever. This is going to get stopped very shortly. And by round five, it got stopped. That was an enjoyable fight to watch. But I'll tell you, apart from Cordina's performance, who else would you have said got performance of the night? Because I just want to see if you got the same person as me.
Jordan Thompson?
No, it's Alpha Barrett.
Barrett.
I felt Barrett had the performance of the night.
He had a good night. He did, yeah. He had a good night against Jason Sanchez, didn't he? I mean, Barrett's got it in a locker now, I suppose. He's always there for me. He's got the ability. So, I mean, it's good to see him get the victory. And it was a good performance, Sean. You're right. I was impressed with Jordan Thompson's performance, though, because, you know, it was a good win for him against Watkins.
Yeah, it was. I will. Don't get me wrong. I'm not discrediting that as a performance, because that was a performance. It was good to see Jordan finally getting the recognition which I've seen for years with him in terms of his boxing ability and knowing that he could make it to this level. But to be able to go in there and beat Watkins and do it in an emphatic fashion where he took control of the fight, broke it down and eventually stopped Watkins, I thought it was great. It was a great progression for him. And I think there's no time like the present to moving forward now. And I think he is ready. He says he wants the bigger fights. I think he's ready for them now. I think Luke Watkins is a good benchmark.
It's a good benchmark,
isn't it, for him? Because you look at Watkins' career and who he's lost to, and he's only lost to the best fighters, really, in and around this division. So that sort of sets you alight as to where Jordan Thompson is. So you think now Thompson's probably ready for all them bigger names in the cruiserweight division. So I'm looking forward to that.
I'd like to see Chamberlain. That'd be a good fight. Isaac Chamberlain. I'd like to see that one.
That'd be a great fight. I think that would be needed for Chamberlain, because Chamberlain needs a little bit of redemption, doesn't he, at this point, with, you know, CBS, Chris Billam-Smith having the Acoli fight now on May the 27th. You know, someone like Isaac Chamberlain's kind of out in the cold a little bit. And I think Jordan Thompson needs a win against someone like an Isaac Chamberlain to continue moving forward. However, his domestic opposition, what they were saying in the post-fight interview, what Hearn was saying, is like, we want to move him forward. We want world-level fighters. This was an IBF European Cruiserweight title fight. So obviously that puts him in the top 15 within the IBF rankings. And now that gives him the opportunity to fight world-level contenders, fringe contenders. So it looks like that's the route they're going to potentially take him down. Although the Chamberlain fight would be brilliant. I think with a lot of our guys fighting each other at the moment at Cruiserweight, I think it would make sense to do it. So, yes.
Yeah, I think it's a crossroad for the pair of them. It gives them both an opportunity, doesn't it? It gives Chamberlain another opportunity. You know, he's only lost to the best, really, in this division as well. So Thompson's on his way out. You know, he's undefeated. So it makes sense. But I know it depends, isn't it, really, with these guys, how they're going to manoeuvre them. And I think... the reason why our cruiserweights have done so well is because they've fought each other. And that is, for me, it gets them into a great... It just helps them. It develops you as a fighter. Yeah. So when you go through adversity and you make that stepping stone up into the next level, you're going to come through with shining colours. And that's what I think Jordan needs. Just needs another step up, and Chamberlain's another step up. And Chamberlain is also a guy that's good enough. Just sticking him in with a couple of Romanians, no disrespect to the Romanians, I'm just saying that I don't believe that, you know, you don't want, what you don't want now is a soft touch.
No.
You know, he's 14 fights in. I say your soft touches, but you get your learning curves, you get your learning fights after 10. After 10 fights, this is where you need to start moving up. There's no point now in dipping down below a Luke Watkins. It just doesn't make sense.
And you're right.
I think Chamberlain is the perfect. It gives him that opportunity, doesn't it? To one of them, it's a danger fight because Chamberlain could beat him. So yep. That's what it's about, isn't it?
Exactly. And I couldn't have put it better myself. At the end of the day, this is something I criticised Selfa Barrett and his team for previously. You know, he's sort of 31 fights into his career now, you know, and he's had these world titles shot and he lost to Rakimov, but he's shown he was world level in that fight and he was unlucky in that fight. And I think what he's shown against Jason Sanchez, who came in, he's shown that he had, again, heart and determination. He boxed beautifully. He really looked well. Sanchez did put up a little bit of resilience in in there, which was good, because he needs that. You know, when he's bowling people over, you don't need to be bowling people over all your career. And that's kind of what Zelfa did for the best part of his career. He's got these Romanians, he got the Eastern Europeans, and he got the guys in that made him look good, and he's shown his boxing ability. But it was when he stepped up to that top level where, you know, he's been shown to be at that level, when he fought Kiko Martinez in that controversial win that he got, when potentially that could have been a loss for him in any other given night. But he needed that experience, like you were saying about Thompson needing the experience. Zelfa got that level of experience. He goes in against Rakimov, he does really well for what, now is it 8-9 rounds, and gets caught, brilliant, and gets stopped, and then he goes into this fight and he just looks as good. I think now there's a potential here where Zelfa will fight Cardina, because Zelfa was saying in his post-fight interview, you know, he wants the Cardina fight, and apparently they'd spoken, you know, behind closed doors, and that was something they wanted to do. So Cardina and Zelfa Barrett, for Cardina's first events, and Zelfa Barrett getting another shot at the title is great, really, for British boxing, because, you know, you've got two British guys going in there and fighting for that title. So that's fantastic. That'd be a really good way for Cardina to carry on, and obviously for Zelfa to get another opportunity. It'd be a great fight because they've both got great abilities as well. So that was a good fight to watch. I did enjoy that. I enjoyed Jordan's fight. I enjoyed Gavin's fight. I watched Sandy Ryan pick up the WBO welterweight title. She now looks like she's going to be fighting Jessica McCaskill as well, which is going to be a really interesting fight. The fight itself was quite one-sided, though. I thought when I watched it, at times I was kind of switching off, if I'm being totally honest. You know, I was kind of losing concentration with watching it, because I think she handled it so well and so comfortably that it was like what you were saying about the potential between Rakimov and Cardina, that you can kind of, when you get a fight like this, sometimes you can kind of switch off if there's not the sort of level of action that you're kind of expecting out of it. So it was great to see a win, and it's good that it looks like they've got a deal already signed to fight Jessica McCaskill in the welterweight division. That's perfect for her. You know, this is where she's sort of come onto the map now, so I'm happy for her. She overcame adversity from that earlier loss to now become a world champion, to now looking like she's going to be fighting for, you know, for more than just one title. So it's really good. It wasn't actually a bad card. I actually enjoyed quite a few of the fights on the card. So it made a change to be able to come on the podcast and say, I actually enjoyed four or five fights on this card, rather than saying it was just one, maybe two at best, and the rest was just pretty box standard for me. So yeah, I was really happy with watching quite a few of them fights. And then going back to the American card then, Johnston, of course we've got to talk about David Morrell in the super middleweight division and getting that first round KO.
I mean, that was just completely, I wasn't expecting that at all from Morrell. I mean, I was expecting a knockout. I was actually going over six, to be honest with you. I thought that Falco might be able to present a bit more of a challenge for him, but Morrell was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. There was a moment in there where his legs had gone Falco as well, where you sort of thought, could the referee have stopped it there? And there were probably a couple of moments. Maybe he could have stepped in just before the absolute rendering, when poor Falco ended up literally going to sleep on the canvas for a while. And I mean, Morrell, he celebrated as well. It was nice. He celebrated. He was like, you know, happy with the win. But then he sort of settled down a little bit after. You know, you're going to do that. The adrenaline kicks in. And I think after a while, it was like, he settled down. And let's just get Falco back up and on his... up on his ass, basically, and awake. But devastating knockout. Absolutely devastating. I mean, I think he's after Benavidez, isn't he, as well, I believe. And do you know what? For a guy who's just... I know the thing is, he's 8 fights in and he's absolutely demolishing guys. I still feel that he just needs another couple. You know, just have another couple. I feel, rather than trying to push that Benavidez fight, because I'm not saying he wouldn't be able to knock him out, but I feel that you just need a couple of more learning curves. He's never been really in a situation before where he's actually been really hurt and needing to dig deep. I think he needs one of them. I think he needs someone to hurt him, because otherwise he's going to walk into that fight, he's going to bowl everyone over, realise all of a sudden Benavidez is still standing there when he lands one, and that's when you come unstuck. So, but for me, look, Sean, great finish. It was a great finish. You can't knock that. And just after one round as well.
Yep.
I mean, he needs a few more rounds, doesn't he? I mean, it's impressive. Like, you know, 9 fights, 8 knockouts, what, 40 rounds? The guy's not messing about. So, yeah, I don't know what you think. Do you think you should take that fight, Benavidez? Is it too early for him?
I mean, part of me says yeah, and another part of me says no. And I suppose the part of me that says no is because I think of Leon Spinks and Muhammad Ali. I think of that sort of history of the sport. When you've got someone, Johnston, that's so well built in their career already, that they've had such an extensive career outside of the professional side of the sport, you can't really discredit the fact that if they're ready for it, they're ready for it. At the end of the day, if they've had that many fights outside of the professional side of the sport, then you've got to give them the opportunity. You know, you look at Lomachenko going for a world title in his second fight. Yeah, albeit he lost to Salido, but look at what he went on to do following that. So, you know, he was able to go into that second professional fight and be there and hang it with Salido. You know, he lost, he learned from it, he come back and he dominated for many, many fights. And I think someone like Morel could go in there with Benavidez. Yeah, it could be a real big learning curve for him, but it depends on him, it depends on his team. If they feel he's ready for it, then they know best. You know, at the end of the day, they know best. But I understand what you're saying, because you'd want to see him, you know, at least have them extra couple of maybe more difficult fights, because if he does go in there and he gets beaten, and people are going to say, yeah, well, he didn't have enough fights, because that's the first thing you naturally say. It's like, oh well, you know, he only had 9 fights, so you got to give him his due. He's gone in there after 9 and he's put a good performance on, and he'll learn from that. But he might not want to be in that position. If he wants to go out there and make a statement, then fair play.
I would absolutely love to see him fight that Belanga. I think that'd be a great fight, Edgar Belanga.
Yeah.
I think that's a good fight. I know he's a little bit lower down in the rankings, some people.
It's a great fight,
he's
though.
20-0. That's a good fight, you know. Both 25, you know, you're expecting a knockout. So that'd be a great, great fight. And then from there, then you can maybe look at, like, a John Ryder after, I'm writing him off here, you know, after the Alvarez fight. But that's the sort of route, isn't it? Gongora, and then you can go, like, then you can look at maybe, like, a Plant, trying to get Demetrius Andre, try and get him in the ring after, you know, once you've sort of got rid of those fringe fighters. I don't believe David Benavidez would take the fight. He wants a Canelo fight,
yep.
Clearly. I'm sure he'd be pushing for that. And eventually, I think that's sort of the fight that's going to happen. But great, impressive performance from Morel. But the one thing I will say as well is the bully. What's his face? Beck the Bully. Talking about fighters here like Thompson, where you need those challenges. You know, if there's no one better than Gabriel Rosado, is there, Sean? I mean, the guy has 16 or was it 17 defeats, but the guy is a challenge. You know, he is. He knocked him out. He knocks out Bully the Beck in, like, unbelievable fashion. You didn't even know it was going to happen. They have the rematch, and Bully the Beck puts in a good performance and gets the win. I had a feeling that Rosado would go the distance. He's just that perfect guy. If you can find those guys like the Morel, if you can find a guy that can stand up to him and take him 12 rounds, that is exactly what...
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, let's just move over to the card that happened in Poland. And Alan Babich, the Savage, so much has been made of him in his future, and now it's been completely turned on its ass because he got stopped by a fellow undefeated fighter in Lukas Rozanski in the first round, and it was quite an emphatic stoppage as well. Man, is that the beginning of the end of Alan Babich? Because it kind of felt a little bit like it after watching that. I was like, he just doesn't seem to be there. It's like his body was there, but his mind wasn't. And he got absolutely obliterated in the first round. And, you know, all this hype now surrounding him, I think it's going to fade pretty quickly, because I just don't see how he will be able to regain what he had. You know, he was on this really good spell of knocking fighters out and getting really significant victories. He was beating people like Niall Kennedy and Tom Little and Damian Chambers and then Eric Molina. And, you know, these are all names that we know in the UK and are all names that were tests for him at certain levels. They were tests. And then he comes up against Rozanski, who is 14-0 and you know, for the most part, largely unknown. He knocked out Arthur Spilker in his last fight, but that was like 2 years ago, so he'd not fought for that length of time. And yet he comes in and takes out the Savage, and I just don't know what that's gonna do for Savage now. I just think for him going forward, does that take that aura away from him? Because I think it does. That aura that he had around him now, where Matchroom were promoting the hell out of him, I've got a feeling he's going to become one of these fighters that just get dropped quicker than a bad habit.
I think you might be right. I mean, he the thing is when you looked at the fight, you see Rozanski, and he's a big fella. I mean, he's a heavyweight, a big, massive heavyweight. I mean, 250, I think he weighed. I think it was about 250 he weighed. Yeah, he was a big fella. He was, you know, not on the night, but in his career, he's actually gone up that high. He's, 37 years of age. He could obviously bang. And when you see Babich and you see how many times he does get it square on the chin, and he's been sort of staggered a couple of times, you did feel like, well, I don't know, maybe giving away those sort of 10 pounds, I think it was, or 12 odd pounds that eventually he might become a cropper. But you sort of felt that Babich would come through it. And in the end, it was, I mean, he moaned at the end, but he was put down and he was hurt a couple of times. And for me, referee was within his rights. He could have let it continue, but I think it was only going to go one way. So Babich, now, what's he going to do? He has to fight the guy again, Sean, doesn't he? I mean, unfortunately for him, he's going to have to go and take this guy on in Poland again.
That's the only way to redeem yourself, really, isn't it?
It's the only way. And he's not the type of guy that you can change and he's going to sort of bob and weave and he's going to move. It's just the only thing that's going to happen is hopefully he gets in quicker. That's it.
Well, on the same card, Martin Bacoli was out and he got a victory. TKO in the third round against a opponent named Hulk, which, look, he was 10-0. You know, he wasn't known by anybody. He's not really ranked anywhere. And the most interesting part about the whole Martin Bacoli being in Poland was the fact that Dillian White was also there. And Dillian White called Martin Bacoli a paedophile and a nonce in an interview with a Polish reporter. So Martin Bacoli was shouting something in the background. And if anybody's seen this, then you will know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, go and watch it. It's a little interview that Dillian White's doing with a Polish reporter there, and you can hear someone shouting in the background. It's Martin Bicola shouting at Dillian White, giving him some crap, basically, you know, for a potential future fight between the two of them. And in the middle of conversation, literally, Dillian White just says, I don't know what he's saying over there. He's a paedophile. He's a nonce. And then he starts shouting back at him. And then I saw another video, I think it was Boxing Social that stuck this out, where Dillian White's sort of half up the stairs and Martin Bicola's at the bottom of the stairs, and they're still trading verbals with one another, but nothing's actually happening. And it's like, well, it's quite obvious Dillian White isn't getting the Joshua fight that he wanted in the summer, so he's looking for an opponent right now, and he seems to be popping up on every show at the moment as a pundit, and he's looking for a potential heavyweight fight. And there's certainly going to be a little bit of needle to this now, because I think people are going to have to get their lawyers around, because he's just accused Martin Bacoli of being a paedophile and a nonce. So I'm not too sure where that's actually going to go from here, but there's definitely needle for a fight between those two, isn't there?
I'd say that's not a bad little fight to have, actually. It's a dangerous one, really, for Dillian, to be fair. I think Bacoli's got the potential to beat him, so that'd be a good fight. I mean, that's just helped Bacoli out, in a way. I mean, the fact that he's called him a nonce and a pedo is not good from Dillian, but, you know, Dillian is Dillian, isn't he? He's what he's going to do. He's the same as Derek, you know, they're the type of guys that say these stupid things. I'm sure there's no substance to what he's saying. It's just him being a little, just trying to sort of piss him off, and he's clearly done that. Hopefully, there's only one way to sort these differences out, isn't there, Sean? Let's fight.
Yeah, good old Harry Hill fights. Get the fight on, guys. Get it on. Yeah, it's a good fight. And I'd like to see it, because I think Bacoli could beat White. I'll be honest with you. I think Bacoli could.
He's definitely got a great chance. He has.
I think he's come a long way since that loss to Michael Hunter. I think he really has come a long way since then. And you think about some of the victories he's had over the past couple of years. I think look at the victories. Look at the wins, look at where he's been written off, and he's got these victories. Like, beating Tony Yoka in his last fight was a big win for him. He's beat Marius Wack in 2019, you know, he's beat Kevin Johnson, he's beat Sergey Kuzmin. He's had some really good victories on his resume in this heavyweight division, and I think it's time he had a big fight. What bigger fight to have than somebody who needs a fight at the moment? And I think this would be a good sell, because there'd certainly be some needle behind it. Not condoning any of the comments from Dillian, because, of course, you know, they're really defamatory and derogatory towards Bacoli. But at the end of the day now, it's certainly going to provide something going forward for a fight between the two of them. But, yeah, overall, Johnson, this weekend was just great. It was great to watch, weren't it? It's great seeing boxing come out of the gutter for a change, because at the moment, it feels like in every other interview that somebody's doing or someone's getting tested positive for something, it feels like boxing just keeps getting kicked to the curb and down the gutter. And when you get weekends like this, it makes you fall back in love with the sport if you start to fall out with it. So it was great to see.
It was, and it's good to see Garcia, Davis and fighting each other. I mean, we see, as you say, you know, a lot of crap going about at the minute. I mean, even this discussions with this super fights with Wilder and Joshua and Fury and Usyk and the amount of money and that, you know, this potential, whether it be like a weekender or if it's some sort of four fight deal, or, you know, where the winners fight each other, the losers fight each other, and then he's probably going to be in Saudi, and, you know, it all sounds magical, but there's just no substance to it because it doesn't. It's just the chance. That's not going to bloody happen. So we're going to see. Probably Fury will fight someone in the summer at some point, which is promising. May even be old Zhang. Who knows? But yeah, so it's the one thing about this weekend, you've seen Davis and Garcia step up to the plate. No titles on the line. Just all that was about was just getting the better of your opponent, getting the better of your other, the guy, the other challenger in the division. And that was all that was about. And there's no titles. There was no, I actually thought someone was going to pull in a WBC title at some point and put it around Davis's neck. And I'm glad they didn't. I really am. I thought, I don't know, God knows what they would have called it. Called it something special. And they didn't. So it was just all about bragging rights. And I love that. That's what it's, that's what the sport's about. You know, they are, they're contenders at the end of the day. They're not, no, none of them are champions. They've been champions, but they were in there with no straps around the belt, and I think that just shows you there was a lot of intrigue about the fight. Everyone wanted to see it, so it just shows you don't need these titles online. You don't, it doesn't necessarily have to be a unification fight. Have the bollocks to fight each other, and as you say, as you said, rightly said, Sean Garcia's lost. He will come back a better fighter, and who knows, maybe he gets a Haney fight in a couple of years and beats him. So who knows? And then all of a sudden everyone says how great Garcia is. It's you know, you'd have just got to fight each other. And it was nice to see old Sugar Ray Leonard there as well, and discussing his fights with Duran and Hagler. That was good to see. And they did really push that. We even said that, Sean, didn't we? You mentioned Leonard and Hagler, and I mentioned Leonard and Duran. And funny enough, they were using those for fragments of the show to push the show, just to show you that, you know, these greats, look where they become and look what they go on to. So hopefully it's a great chance for it to happen. And yeah, I've really enjoyed it. And do you know what? I actually I didn't stay up. I fell asleep and woke up and watched the fight. And I hadn't done that in a long time. I hadn't done that in a long time because that's how much I wanted to see it.
Yeah, it was great. A great weekend. I've really enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed talking about it again for this episode. And I hope you guys listening, you've enjoyed our thoughts, feelings and opinions on the action over the weekend. Please do get in touch if you've got any thoughts and feelings of your own about the fights or the future of some of these fighters. It would be really good to hear from you. You can find us on every social media channel at BTR Boxing Podcast. And please make sure you're going checking out all of our series-based content. We have The Darker Side of Boxing, Seasons 1, 2 and 3. That has just finished airing. So please, if you're relatively new to the network, go and listen to The Darker Side of Boxing. Listen to Career Profiles, 40 episodes, biographies on some of the most notable fighters in boxing history. And some of those that might be classed as quite obscure, but fighters that you'll never forget about once you hear about them. And then you've got our Legendary Night series, some of the most compelling fights in boxing history, retold, stories that you may have never have heard about behind the scenes, and another great show to the network. So please make sure you do check out all of our series-based content. And we also encourage you to go and check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/BTR Boxing Podcast. On there, you will get early access to series-based content. You'll get ad-free versions of all of our episodes on there. You'll get Patreon-only episodes, and you will get an exclusive series which is called Boxing Through the Decades, where me and Johnston, we go through all of the decades from 1900 all the way up to 2020 in single individual episodes. We talk about notable fighters, notable fights, some of the best weights, some of the best names in this sport, and ultimately the plan for us is to get to the end of the show and do a final episode where we compile all of these fighters together and ultimately try and give you the definitive list of the best fighters in that particular period of time. So, you know, we're still going through it. We're just about to release the 1960s episode, so there's quite a few episodes already out there, plus you've got all the other Patreon only one-off stuff that we've done. So if you you want to become a patron, you want to subscribe, and you want to put a little bit of support towards us financially, you can do so and get all of that in return. Please do go and check it out. And for those that are already there, that are long-time patrons that have been supporting us for quite some time, and even those that are very new to Patreon, thank you. Thank you so much for always supporting us. And that is it for this episode of the Big Fight Reaction. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.
A dream is made real. Ricky Hatton rocks the world.
How do you like it? How do you like it?
Wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
It's over. Mamma mia, he's done it. Anthony Joshua defeats Vladimir Klitschko.
Podcast Network.